Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with three lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
A Radio.com sports station.
See if Yastrzemski gets a fastball here that he can hit. He does. High into center field. It is out of here. Unbelievable. Number 20 here at Fenway Park for Mike Yastrzemski.
The emotions he must be feeling right now.
He led, tied for the team lead with 21 home runs last year. Mike Yastrzemski, one of the real bright spots on last year's roster. Good enough to join us here on 95.7 The Game. Damon Ratto and Joe Shasky this afternoon. Mike, thanks so much for joining us, man. How you doing?
Doing well. Thanks for having me, guys.
It's good to have you here. Let me start with a personal thanks. Back in another world, another lifetime, in February, when we were getting together to do things like charity events, you, several Giants, came out to support the Guardsmen. You were wonderful at the sports auction. I got to meet you. My wife and I spoke to you and your wife for a little while. You couldn't have been a nicer guy. Thank you so much for coming on out and supporting an important local charity. That really meant a lot to us. You didn't have to do it being so new in the city, but there you were. Thanks so much, man.
Absolutely. I had a great time at that event, and they're a first-class organization and put on a wonderful event, so we had a blast meeting you guys there, too.
Thank you. It was really good to have you. That is normally the weekend where players gather in San Francisco and then go on to Scottsdale, and that's exactly what you did, but you weren't in Scottsdale very long, obviously. What have the subsequent weeks been like for you, Mike?
They've been hit and miss, you know, because we were very unsure of what was going on. So those are the times where you got to kind of do your own work in private and, you know, trust that what you're doing is the right thing for the process.
But not knowing that is probably a little unsettling, given the fact that your entire career and the entire careers of everybody around you have always had that sort of 6-week structure before a season starts, where you can not only get your work in, but get your work in with other people with whom you can bounce ideas off of. And now you're getting your work in probably largely by yourself. How disorienting is that?
It's kind of tough, but one of the best things is that the Giants do a great job of checking in on you. They would get on Zoom calls once a week, and you could call the hitting coaches or anybody you really needed to. So that open line of communication was huge for us. And that was really, honestly, reassuring in a time where you don't know what's going on. So continuing communication and trying to plan those next steps and making sure that your workouts are all set and they can get as much swings and as much throwing in as possible.
Mike, to that effect, I'm curious, because we've seen some of the setups for the NBA guys that are high profile. Where are you getting this work in, if you don't mind me asking? Like, who are you working with? Where are you getting the work in during this time right now?
Yeah, I was really lucky enough, because my roommate in spring training was actually a guy with the Reds, Kurt Casale. And so we kind of started our quarantine together, and he lived in Nashville. And we had a little high school that the two of us could go down to, since we knew we'd been around each other so much. So we had just the two of us, and we'd go hit BP. And then eventually we got some pitchers to throw to us and kind of kept our distance. So it worked out really nicely, fortunately for me.
Do you still call Nashville your off-season home? I know you're a Vandy guy.
I do, yeah. we're living in Nashville now, and obviously we're back in the Bay Area with everything starting to get going again. But Nashville's been a great city for me, and ever since I went there for college, I've definitely called it home.
Did you know that since Missouri and Texas A&M have joined the SEC, Vanderbilt no longer has the worst in-conference football record? Arkansas is now the caboose of the SEC. Congratulations to Commodores everywhere.
Yeah, we'll take every little step that we can, and in that sense, we're really looking to improve, and I think they're starting to build a really good program, and the school's committed to it, so it's been fun to follow.
There you go. Go Vandy. What are you expecting to hop into when you hop into Oracle Park tomorrow to restart spring training? Like, what's the first thing you do? You a little long toss to loosen up the arm? Are you going to hop in the cage first? What's the first thing Yastrzemski does walking in?
Say hi to everyone from a distance.
Fair enough.
I think that's the most important thing, especially with 60 games. You know, getting some good team camaraderie and making sure that everybody is on the same page and abiding by the rules, making sure that we're staying safe. So once we can kind of clear all that, then we'll be on our way.
Ignoring the safety protocols that are going to be all around you, baseball has always been a sport in which you could sort of build up to your true pace. In a 60-game season where that's not possible, how do you maintain sort of an equilibrium day to day? Because basically you're going to get 63% fewer at bats, 63% fewer times in the outfield, that every game suddenly has an importance that's 1.5 times what it used to be. How do you manage to sort of maintain the equilibrium that you've always been taught to have in a season where basically if you get off to a slow start, you're done?
Yeah. Well, it's kind of like September baseball all the way around. We were in a really good chance in August and September to play really meaningful games. So I think we have a good core group that's kind of used to that. And the second part to that is we have a ton of guys that went to college. You know, even though we may have guys that have been out of college for a while, we all know what it's like to play a 58-game season. So I think having that experience is going to be really beneficial. And so that's one of those things that you're going to kind of lean on your past experiences and try and get an advantage from that.
Mike, I'm curious. Last year, you played a lot of corner outfield for this team, and you played it very well. What's the idea this year? Are you going to play a little center, or are you going to be maybe back to right and left field?
I honestly have no idea. I've been telling Cap from day one and Farhan as well that I'm comfortable playing wherever they feel that it is best for the team. I just want to be in the lineup as much as possible and trying to impact the game however I can, whether it's left, center, or right.
Designated hitter, Mike Yastrzemski. I think I just threw up in my mouth a little.
Yeah, I'm not so sure that one will fall on me, even though we have the option. We've got a ton of guys that have some heavy bats, so I think we'll find a way to get those guys into the lineup.
Yeah, you had just about as heavy a bat in that lineup last year, no doubt. Mike Yastrzemski in his second season with the Giants, you know, Gabe Kapler coming into his first season. All sorts of big shoes to fill, obviously, with Bruce Bochy exiting stage left. But how difficult is it going to be to establish, a culture in 60 games for a first year in the dugout with the Giants, Gabe Kapler? I mean, it was going to be tough just stepping in no matter what. This makes it even tougher, doesn't it?
I think it does, but Cap did a really good job before he even got us to spring training. You know, he was traveling around to meet guys and have lunch with people, and he's huge on creating a relationship, and we've already started that and continued it over Zooms and phone calls. And I think that his willingness to put himself in the trenches is going to be what's going to get guys to really, really buy into him and how hard he works himself, where it's hard to be someone who doesn't work as hard as your manager.
How this is a ridiculous question to ask, but I'm just the girl to do it. How much do you not know about Gabe Kapler as a manager that you would have learned if you'd had a full spring training and a regular? I mean, how far sort of behind that curve is he with the players and the players with him?
I would say he's actually ahead of the curve, like I was saying, because he'd been working his tail off to travel the country to see us. And when you have somebody who's willing to put in that amount of effort into you as a person, then you can't help but give them your best. And when that happens and you get a full group working in the same direction, you never know what the outcome can be.
Mike, I've been watching Giants baseball for 35 years, and I got to admit, last year was pretty not good, you know what I mean, on a variety of levels. But what happened in September with you going to Boston was a Disney moment. I mean, it really was. Are you sick of the Fenway talk of you hitting the home run, getting the standing ovation from the Boston crowd? I mean, that because I'm being real, that was one of the cooler moments last year as a Giants fan.
Yeah, you know, I don't think you can ever get tired of those really, really strong emotional moments. That's kind of why you play the game, is because as a kid, we all wanted to play in our hometown and hit a home run in front of our families. And that's kind of the pinnacle of the sport, obviously, unless you can be doing it in the World Series. But the memories that I feel like were created with my family there and my wife and my mom and in-laws on the field, and, you know, my grandmother was there, got to catch the first pitch with my grandfather. Those things are moments that I will never forget. And lucky that we have technology to have video proof of it.
Let me tell you, you proved yourself very patient, not only at the plate at times, but with all the questions you got with Mo Vaughn being your grandfather and all. It must have gotten very, very disturbing, you know.
No, it's great. That's part of the territory with the name. You know, everybody's got different responsibilities that they hold, and I'm fortunate to be in the family that I'm in, so I just embraced it.
Well, very patient with the same question coming at you 700 times in a weekend, that's for sure. Mike Yastrzemski here on 95.7 The Game. So when you walk into the ballpark, you're going to be playing without a single fan sitting in the seats. I guess there's going to be some cardboard cutouts staring back at you. What's going to be odder, no eyeballs or no sound coming from the stands?
I think it'll be no sound, but it's one of those things where this is probably going to be one of the coolest times in the history of baseball, because it's going to be like the Sandlot. It's just a bunch of guys that love playing the game, and we're all out there trying to put on a show for people that can watch at home, but it's really going to come down to, you know, who wants to play baseball, and you're going to really see who loves the game and who doesn't, I think.
How good are you at watching your language when you're just playing?
That's part of where I like the sound. I'm definitely a self-talk guy. So we'll see. I think I'll be more cognizant of it this time.
Are you a big spitter? Are you a seeds guy? Because I know, like they're saying, don't spit, no seeds, no licking the fingers for pitchers.
Yeah, I am a big seeds guy. So that's going to be a little bit of a change. I know we're allowed to chew gum, so I think I'm going to have to make a little transition.
Do you go just salt seeds, or do you go ranch, Tabasco? Are you a David's guy? What seeds are you? What's your choice seed?
I'm usually what's available, but I'm a big Spitz cracked pepper guy.
Spitz cracked pepper.
Throw away out of the park on that one, but that is my favorite.
You got to stay hydrated with those ones, though, unfortunately, because they just get you real, real sodium mouth, as I like to call it. Mike, did you watch the junior doc? Did you watch the 1998 doc at all? Because, man, I got to be honest with you. Mark McGwire, Sammy Sosa, Ken Griffey Jr., those were the guys from my childhood. Were any of those guys your guy in the backyard? Were you ever emulating Junior or Sosa or McGwire?
I was always emulating Junior. That was kind of like, that was so nostalgic for me, because I remember in 99 was when they had the All-Star game at Fenway. Yeah. And I was fortunate enough to go to the Home Run Derby and watch the All-Star game. And when they were hitting balls over the light tower, it was like, you couldn't believe it. And the buzz that was going around the ballpark at that time was so fun. Just to be in the seats at one of those games was so exciting. And I got to relive that again. And so that was so cool. And I thought ESPN did a great job with that.
And, of course, your grandfather was there, Ted Williams, with your other grandfather, Tony Gwynn. All your grandfathers were there that day.
My whole family was there.
Did you and your grandfather talk much during the period when there were no games? I mean, because he he was, you know, he endured his share of lockouts too. Was he of any kind of resource in helping you sort of understand not just the issues as presented, but the undercurrent thereof? And more to the point, was he able to sort of allow you to keep patient through all the waiting and the, we're not playing, oh, maybe we are, oh, we're playing 80 games, no, you're playing 40. I mean, was he of any kind of resource in getting you through that period?
Yeah, a little bit. You know, he's taken a more of a listening approach with me instead of a speaking approach. So he doesn't just call and give me advice. It's more or less he's there as an ear. If I had any complaints or anything like that, you know, he would be there. But mostly when he would call, it was for updates. He was just curious on when we were going to start, what I'd really been doing. He told me to stop playing as much golf as I was. but it was good.
Did you learn that being a player rep is more of a pain in the ass than it seems?
Yeah, I think that was one of the things that stuck out to me a lot, was seeing how hard it is to actually go through that process, because everybody has their own individual opinions, and there's, you know, 1,200 of them for every team. And it is tough to sit through those situations when all we really wanted to be doing was be back on the field, but our health and safety comes first.
Was the level of frustration that we were seeing from both sides as real as it seemed, or was that a whole bunch of PR public warfare, and it is actually a little bit more, there was more decorum behind the scenes the whole time? It felt like war.
You know, it felt like that at times, and I think those are the things that, in a time of pandemic where everybody needs to understand that there's a bigger picture going on, and we all just need to take the proper steps to be, you know, part of our communities and help out where we need to. And that was one of the things that I felt like I was able to do a little more in Nashville, was to be safe and to be doing my part to make sure that we can do what we can to get rid of this virus.
Mike, we really thank you for joining us, man. This was an awesome conversation. You're as good a guy today as you were that night at the Guardsman Sports Auction. Thank you so much for being so candid. I want to wrap up with this. What's a good season for Mike Yastrzemski? In a year where no normal numbers can be attached to it, what would make you think that 2020 was a good year for you? Not your team, you personally.
You know what? Finding a way to impact this city positively. You know, if one person smiles or kind of forgets about what's going on in the world today to just sit down and watch a baseball game, then I think I did my part, and then I was successful. Bringing a little peace and happiness and a little sense of normalcy would be a success for me.
It's a great answer, man. Thank you so much. We're sure that you're going to get on your way to putting some smiles on faces if we indeed do have this season. Our fingers are crossed. For you and all your teammates, man, health, success, and have a good one. Thank you so much, Mike.
Thank you, guys. It's always a pleasure.
Mike Yastrzemski, San Francisco Giants outfielder here on 95.7 The Game. It's a good conversation. It's a good guy, man. He's going into it with the right attitude. There is no doubt. What is a good season for the San Francisco Giants? I mean, I want people to read 888-957-9570. Mike Yastrzemski just had an awful lot there. Kind of interesting. His grandfather really is a sounding board. He's just there to listen, not really give advice. And given how much the game has changed, maybe that's the right approach. But what is the baseline, a good season for the San Francisco Giants? What would it be? What if I told you they only won 18 games? Could you get a good season out of that if other things happened? What would those other things be? You know, Mike Yastrzemski establishing himself as not a stopgap guy, but someone who is going to be here for a few years as a dependable major league at bat and a versatile outfielder, that would be good. You know, Hunter Pence having one more wasn't that fun season. I really like Hunter Pence, but that can't be a baseline of was this a good year or not, because he's probably not around after this year. So where is the X marks the spot of satisfying baseball? Ray, what do you think?
I think if they only win 18 games, everybody had a terrible year, because that's 300 baseball, and that's what you do when you're going to clean out the roster. So I think they have to aim for an absolute baseline of 25. I mean, it means they'd be 10 games under 500. But I think in some ways, given their horrendous offense, that they overachieved by winning 77 a year ago. And so I think 25 is a decent baseline. And I think that even the best teams are going to be not quite as good because there's so much about this season that's going to be disorienting, that's just going to feel weird, and that there are going to be a lot of players who struggle with that disorientation. So I think if they win 25, I think they could probably say, well, we can at least claim it was a building year. Because last year wasn't a building year. They were still deconstructing that roster and that organization. And I don't know how much progress you can get out of this year. But if they go 18-42, people are just going to be revolted, and they'll be revolted quickly.
No, we're going to be thrilled.
What's a good baseline, Butch?
It's not a numerical win total, I'll tell you that, right? Get a top three pick, for crying out loud. I don't care. I mean, if you're going to suck in a quick amount of time and then get me a top three pick, I'm all for that. Here's what I want to have happen. I want Brandon Belt to have one of his classic 10-day hot streaks to start the year and then trade him away. I want Evan Longoria to get off to a liquid hot magma start so I can move that $38 million on the books for the next 2 years out of here. And I want every single team in the league outside of the Giants to be in contention so that somebody wants Samardzija down the stretch, so that somebody wants the next year of Johnny Cueto on the... This is a fire sale season for me. I want everybody in the mix but the Giants, and I want no excuses here. This is the other thing I want. No excuses. There's no minor league system. I want Bart. I want to see Luciano. Give me Elliot Ramos. I want to see all the youngsters. No more Hunter Pence. He's 37 years old. I don't care what he did in Texas last year. It was awesome. Congratulations. Glad you hit some home runs. But I want to see all the young guys. I want to develop all the young dudes. If we lose every single... If they go 0-60, I'll be the first one to say, great season. Give me that number one pick, baby.
If there was ever a year to have to suffer through a year, make it the shortest year of all time, right? I mean, that feels like a decent way to walk into it. But there's got to be something other than sucking that is the X marks the spot of the year. Who is the one player that you're... I mean, and you're right. Brandon Belt becoming, you know, the New York Yankees are interested. That would be wonderful. That would be wonderful. Yes. The truth is, Evan Longoria would have to hit 800 over the first 2 months of the year in order for anyone to take on that, Albert. I mean, seriously, what is he? He is due
$38 million. $38 million after this year. That's what he's left on the contract after this year with a club option, which I'm assuming they're not going to pick up.
You would think that Farhan's here to not pick up that option. You really would. You really would. What does Farhan do? I think the most interesting San Francisco Giant is Farhan. There is no doubt. Here's something that you would have never believed would be the truth about the Giants in comparison to the Oakland A's, who for a very long time sold you the most interesting dude on this team is the general manager. In a crazy way, that's what the Giants got now.
Yeah.
The most interesting dude on the team is the guy trying to crunch numbers and wins out of an algorithm, not actual major league talent. God bless Billy. He had an awful lot of actual major league talent disguised as league minimum contracts. Like their farm system, say what you want about what the A's never did to finish it. The way that they've started so many sentences is wildly impressive. It really, really is. The Giants, they are the least talented team in baseball when they're bad, and you can make an argument that through three World Series, their talent was negotiable. Day in, day out, negotiable. You did not know quite what you were going to get. Pitching forward, bullpen heavy, everywhere else, good luck. And in two of those 3 years in the World Series, I mean, you had at least seven dudes having career years out of the blue. And, oh, Marco Scudero just happens to be Onis Wagner for 3 days, you know, the three most important days. You know, so it's going to be fascinating to see what comes out of this year that means anything to 2021, 22, 23. Yeah. That's where this whole thing happens. We'll ask Susan Slesser a little bit more about the A's when she joins us later on. Look around the rest of Major League Baseball. Some other things from the game of baseball that I think you got to keep an eye on if you're looking at the overall health of the league. And I don't mean health of the league from an actual health of the league standpoint. I'm just like, are you a baseball fan? Here's a few things to keep an eye on if we are actually going to have baseball. That is coming up next. We just went long. I hope you thought that was tasty. Great interview with Yastrzemski. Nice job all the way around, especially on Mike's part. And indeed, he is David Ortiz's grandson. And now you know. It's time for the all-time top 10 Bay Area athlete list starting on Monday. You'll submit your top 10 list to 957thegame.com. I saw somebody earlier. Where do I submit my list? You start on Monday, not today. On Monday, that's when list submissions go in. Groupthink happens. We'll start unveiling ours. And over the next 2 weeks, we will get to number one here on 95.7 The Game. Damon Ratto and Kolsky. No, Kolsky, you got a butcher boy in this afternoon. And we will figure out what you need to be grilling over the 4th of July weekend. Don't go anywhere. We're just underway this afternoon. Damon Ratto and Kolsky, a little butcher in the action here on 95.7 The Game.
Damon Ratto and Kolsky continues on 95.7 The Game.
Really good to have you here. Thanks so much for stopping on by today. Mike Yastrzemski was an awesome conversation yesterday. We had the pleasure of talking with Marcus Semien. He was fantastic. Susan Slesser is going to join us at 4:45 this afternoon to talk about the coming season, if indeed it does get here. You know, there's a part of me that doesn't think any sports should be happening. We got bigger fish to fry. There's another part of me that does love sports, even baseball, as mad as I am at it for so many legit reasons. Okay, I love you. You know, I do. I do. I can't quit you, baseball. I've tried many, many times. I can't. You piss me off. It's a relationship. It's like a brother. You know, you're no one is allowed to get as mad at your brother as you are, but because that's your family, you can get that angry at it. I think if you love baseball, you have to hate it sometimes, and vice versa. What are you guys looking forward to, if anything, in terms of overall league story arcs? You know, as I look around, you know, Bryce Harper's got this reputation for being a hot start. If he gets off to a hot start and the Phillies come together, that all of a sudden gets things interesting. What if there is no World Series hangover for the Washington Nationals, who, you know, have such a odd off? You know, a World Series hangover is a real thing. It happened to the Giants. It happened to the Cubs. We've seen it happen many, many, many times. What if their offseason was so long they won't have the hangover? They took their aspirin and they're ready to go again. They're feeling fresh as the daisy. I think that makes things really interesting. Obviously, the Dodgers finally crossing, breaking the tape in first place. Not in the division, not in the league, but as the World Series champion is something that everybody in Northern California and Southern California is going to be interested in watching for all sorts of different reasons. How players trim their rosters from 60 to 30 to the taxi squad to who gets traded to whose value rises and falls. Like, there are a lot of moving parts here I am interested in.
There are a lot of moving parts, but the problem is we won't know that they're moving or how they're moving until we're in the rearview mirror, because so much of this year, and I mean, I brought up the question with Yastrzemski when he was on, is going to be really disorienting in a sport that has built up its own rhythms and habits over more than a century. And this is different than the sprint in 95 or the abortive season in 94 or any of the other work stoppages, because this is essentially taking the game down past what a minor league season would be to what he himself said was it's a college season. And so there isn't going to be, oh, that's a tough 0-for-4, you'll get him tomorrow. Tomorrow comes on you real fast. And the tomorrow after that comes on you even faster. And after about 10 of those, you could either be in great position or you could be done. Because 60 games is going to go by in a flash. And I don't think anybody in baseball understands how that's going to work, because it's never been asked before, not since like the 1880s. So I think everybody's going to be sort of in this weird disoriented state, and they're not going to figure it out until, oh my God, there are 3 weeks left. What do we do?
And inject all that into my veins, Ray. I want it all. I want the whole thing. Let me give you one state. Now, the Yankees are going to be their own story because they're the Yankees. But the state of California is the state that I'm most interested in. Obviously, my Giants. But let's go to Southern California real quick. And we know the Oakland A's are going to be contenders. They're set up brilliantly for this entire run. The Angels getting Rendon to finally be some protection in between Pujols, Ohtani, and Mike Trout. That's going to be awesome to watch. And then
what's Joe Maddon
exactly,
do in that dugout, right?
Exactly. I'm so pumped up for the Angels. They have no pitching. They're all hitting. Is Ohtani going to pitch this year? Sounds like his shoulder's ready to go. I'm fired up for it.
Apparently, he's going to start once a week. They plan on starting him once a week.
This is going to be awesome. This is going to be awesome. It's going to be awesome. Then let's go a little farther. My favorite player in baseball, hands down, well, obviously it's Cody Bellinger, but on the other side, Fernando Tatis Jr. I want to see what this guy has as an encore. I want to see Machado. I want to see these Padres. They got new uniforms this year. They are the team for me that I am most interested in seeing. And then you just go around baseball. There's so much young talent right now. Look at what the Atlanta Braves have put together. Look at what your team, the Chicago Cubs, have this year with a new manager. And they've got a lot of guys that probably are playing their last year in Chicago. Chris Bryant, I'm looking at you. So I just think there are so many compelling storylines, and then you just add into the mix again Yankees and their situation every single year. Can they have enough pitching to actually win in October, November, whenever the hell the playoffs are going to be? This is going to be a great baseball season. I'm fired up for it.
What's going to carry the day? Great starting pitching, great bullpen. Who's going to have a 5-man rotation? Who's going to have a 6-man rotation? I think I read a blurb about how the Atlanta Braves might have a, you know, like they've got 8 starters. They're ready to go with 8, maybe 7. You know, I mean, it's crazy. How about, let me ask you, we all agree it is a rebuild, tear it down to build it back up year for the Giants, but do we have to watch? The answer is yes. Would you want to watch Yasiel Puig in a Giants uniform?
Ray, I want to hear your opinion first because I know where I stand.
I'm indifferent, but beyond that, I think he wasn't the blowout player that he should have been in a place like Cincinnati. And a place like San Francisco, which is unforgiving of most power hitters, I think may wear on him offensively. I don't think he'll be a disruption in the clubhouse. I don't think he's going to be difficult in any way, but I think the best way to crush a hitter is to put him in that yard 30 times.
Yeah, I'm all for Puig. I would love to have him on the Giants. He's a great baseball villain. There's not enough baseball villains, to be totally honest with you. I embrace the villainry that this guy brings to the plate. I'm all for it. The only argument against bringing Puig here, it's not, oh, he played for the Dodgers, because I rooted for Oral Hershiser, and one of my favorite managers in Giants history is Dusty Baker, who was bleeding Dodger blue his entire life. He might block someone like Jalen Davis, who I actually am sincerely interested in seeing if this guy can actually play this year. There's a couple names for you when it comes to the Giants, Damon, that actually intrigue me. I'm talking about semi-young players that might have something to their. Obviously, people are going to say Joey Bart. Let's put him to the side. It's Mauricio Dubon, it's Jalen Davis, and it's Yastrzemski. Those are the three guys, and I know Yastrzemski isn't young, but those are the three guys that I'm really interested of seeing this year. I want to see, are they for real? Do they have an opportunity to crack, or are they next Steven Duggar, where I was so intrigued and then I saw what I needed to see and I'm kind of over him.
It's the Christian Arroyo of your dreams. Let me tell you, I'm really interested in what the A's end up looking like. Are they young and dumb enough to be built for the sprint, or will they drown under the instant pressure of this is important baseball and not have, like Ray describes, that normal, natural cycle to build yourself up into a season? You know, Manaea, huge year on the way, maybe. Jesus Luzardo was born the year I was, like, graduating college. I mean, he is a puppy. Let's see what he does. Is he going to be your third, your fourth guy, your fifth guy? AJ Puck, how does he fit into the mix now? Got guys coming off of Tommy John. I mean, is Mike Fiers going to be hailed as a whistle-blowing hero? Night in and night out? Oh, I guess there's no fans to actually boo, so we might not know. What Mike Fiers has left is going to be interesting. Chapman, Olson. This is why we got Susan Slusser coming up today at 4:30 in about an hour from now. We have an awful lot for you this afternoon. When we come on back, though, Draymond Green was on with Jalen and Jacoby. And what do you know? Dalla Dame, Dame Lillard. He is known for just saying it like it is. He has his doubts about the bubble. We're going to get into all that right around the corner. Brought to you by Fremont Bank, full service banking, no compromises.
Damon, Ratto, and Kolsky continues on 95.7 The Game.
Before we move back to the NBA, Draymond Green talking with Jalen and Jacoby on the podcast about the bubble and the season that's going to be coming up. Maybe question mark. Someone's like, it's so adorable how you guys think we're actually going to have a baseball season. Look, you might be right, sir or madam. I don't know. We are laughing in the face of a pandemic, and we haven't had much luck doing that yet. I don't know if any of this is going to happen, but I do know this. Scheduled to appear. We will deal with things as they are scheduled to appear, and the minute that they are not appearing, we'll follow that story too. I don't think we think sports should be happening, but sports are going to try to happen, and we will cover that story on the way to it maybe happening or not. We did ask about the Giants. Guys, I didn't ask you about what a baseline for the Oakland A's is. Before we move on to the NBA, we talked about the Giants season, what we wanted to see, what we hoped to see, what would be fruitful. For the A's, where's the line? Do they need to be World Series champions? I mean, is that what we're measuring them against? Are they now regarded as built to be as good as any team in baseball could be? I know that there's a lot of people suggesting back-to-back 97 wins with a whole bunch of healthy, young, talented kids coming on up should equal very, very good baseball.
I think it will, barring injury, but I think what they have to do is A, acknowledge that if they were to win the World Series, it would be an overachievement because there are still two teams that are better than they are in their own league. I think what they need to do is get out of the first round. They need to get out of the play-in game. They need to make a run that makes it look like they are serious contenders and then take their chances. If they get knocked out right away again, you know, there's no glory ultimately in being the only team that never gets out of it. Never gets past the first hurdle, and that's what they've been for a long time.
Yeah, the sad thing for this, for me here, guys, is I want to say exactly what Ray just said. Oh, you got to get past the wild card. But realistically, and I'm not trying to be some Giants hater on the A's, just look at the situation with common sense. This is the final year with Simeon in that lineup, okay? This is probably the final season with Chapman in that lineup as well, because Chapman's going to be going in for arbitration after this year, and we know how the A's like to operate. We know that they haven't started to build that stadium. This feels like the final run for this core. If they're not going to re-sign Chapman, if they're going to continue to do business the way that they've done business in the past, this is their best opportunity to win a World Series. And, like, I'm rooting for them. I want them to pull it off. I got lots of friends who work with the A's. I want to see them pull it off. They're an unbelievably talented team. They need to figure out second base, obviously. They need to get that bullpen shored up. I thought that the bullpen was leaking oil last year down the stretch, but they're a World Series or bust team. That's the way they are for me because the sand is coming out of the hourglass on both Simeon and Chapman.
It would be so – it would just be so on brand for the A's to go on to win a World Series in a year where no fan was allowed to attend and see it in person and no parade was allowed through Oakland after it happened. That would just be – yes, it would be awesome if they won the World Series. It would also be so – tragic in many, many different ways that, of course, they do it the one year where everyone will question it. People will give it a demerit, whether it's fair or foul. That's what we'll have. I don't care who wins the World Series this year. You'll have 29 other cities saying doesn't mean nothing. That's the way this baseball season is set up to be. It's set up to be a failure for everyone, even the winner almost.
Ray, do you agree with me on the Matt Chapman thing? I mean, he's one of the most exciting players in baseball. Why don't you agree? I'm curious.
Because I think the market for free agents is going to be incredible. I think the market for people to move is going to be incredibly depressed by the amount of money that baseball teams didn't take in this year, and they will find any reason to put in either false or positive economies. So I think there are a lot fewer guys who are going to move this coming offseason. If this isn't just sort of the start of a really long offseason. And I think that, you know, most players are going to end up staying where they are because I don't think there's going to be much of a market for anybody.
Well, I mean, Chris Bryant, Matt Chapman, you're talking about two of the premier third basemen in the game, and they both could be available. I know a team like the San Francisco Giants that would throw $200 to $300 million at either one of those guys to be in their lineup. Like, they're resetting their books financially so they can make a run at guys like that. So I hear you all, but, man, both of those guys, they're so talented. Someone's going to give. I mean, we saw Manny Machado after everyone, we're not going to pay him $300 million. And the owners couldn't help themselves but give the guy $300 million, and he was a basket case. These guys are both model citizens.
There are pre-virus numbers and post-virus numbers, and the post-virus numbers are going to be way lower across the board because teams are going to go, do we have to do this? No? Okay, then we're not doing it. And the Giants will be among those because the Giants may be a rich club, but they are not unlimited. They are not of unlimited wealth. And they've never shown that they want to be of unlimited wealth that way. So, no, I think, you know, they are not. They will put their foot in the water, but it's not going to be for nearly the kind of money that has been traditionally available for elite players like Chapman in particular and to a lesser extent Bryant. I think it's going to be hard to scrape up for agents to scrape up big money for basically anybody.
New York Yankees don't give a crap.
It's that simple, boys and girls. The New York Yankees are going to look at Matt Chapman and go, yeah, any price. Yes, we'll do that.
Exactly.
Done. Here's a blank check, Matt. What do you need? That's how they're going to. You know who the Yankees' third baseman is? Gio Urshela. Miguel Andujar. Feels eminently upgradable to me. New York Yankees.
Didn't they have Clint Frazier or whatever the guy's name is in the minors who's their young guy that they've been holding? See, I think they're going to end up having to move him for pitching. That's my understanding. And the Yankees are you can put the Yankees with anyone, and it's a logical fit. I mean, would they give $250 million to the pitcher, Garrett Cole?
Yeah. No, it's we always know that there's one team that just doesn't care what the world is saying the financials are. The pinstripes do the spending, period. And that's who the Yankees are, and I think will continue to be, even with what we just had a Steinbrenner die. Yes.
Yes.
Yeah. Hal is the surviving Steinbrenner, and he is the more conservative of the two brothers when it comes to spending.
Well, we'll see. So, New York.
I honestly believe that comparing past seasons to this is always a fool's errand because I think. I mean, you saw how eager the owners were to playing as few games as possible. And I think that's going to extend to player acquisition for the foreseeable future. And I don't think there's going to be very much player movement as a result.
You might be right. Peter Burns covers the SEC for ESPN. He's a pal of mine. He's going to join us to talk about what a coming college football season might look like, what is happening down in SEC country. He's always a good guest. And he had a tweet about great sports stats, which went viral, had about 4,000 responses to it, which just, it's, you could scroll through this and do an entire radio show of, hey, what's a great sports stat that you like? Look at all this. Look at all. And I've learned an awful lot. Now, I haven't checked anybody's work. I'm not going to check anybody. I'm going to assume everybody is genius and got everything right. But I saw something today that was really impressive. There have been 28 women ever, I believe, ranked number one in tennis, and Venus Williams has beaten 24 of them.
Wow.
And the other three retired before she even, you know, played. And the only reason why she didn't beat the other one is because she's the other one. I mean, it's staggering how much better than any woman who has ever played tennis she truly is. And just little nuggets like that. To me, one of the most impressive stats ever is that Tony Gwynn could have gone 0-1,000 in his last 1,000 career at-bats, taken an 0-1,000 and still been a career 300 hitter. That Oh, there's Tony Gwynn stat porn is really what it is.
Oh, he's the best.
There's so much. You could just do an entire year on Tony Gwynn's averages and what he did. But we won't do that. But we'll go through some of the best, and then we'll even open it up to the audience in the 4 o'clock hour. Some beloved numbers and stats that made you fall in love with sports in the first place. We're so angry at sports these days. We got to figure out a reason to fall back in love. That's why we got Peter coming up at the top of the hour. In the meantime, Draymond Green on with Jalen and Jacoby. And we're not going to have too much time for this. We'll come back to it a little bit later. But some interesting things were said. Here is Draymond talking about who he thinks is built to be successful in the bubble.
I think going into the season and all season long, the Clippers were the favorite. You know, just when you look at their team, I think they have someone that checks every box, you know, from a defender, Kawhi Leonard, Paul George, Patrick Beverley. They can match up with any team well. When you're talking great size, Kawhi, Paul George, Marcus Morris, you know, they check all the boxes. They can match up with any team well. And, you know, they have shooting. They have Montrez down low. They have everything that you need to win a championship. However, I think, you know, going into this bubble, the Lakers got to be the favorite because, like, they got LeBron, and that he can kind of adjust to anything. And I think he's probably the most disciplined pair we've ever seen in the NBA. And that's going to matter going into this bubble. And so I think, you know, having LeBron on your team going into this bubble gives you a –
We'll get back into all that in a second. Interesting little breakdown. I know that he thinks the Lakers will be healthier, but if Paul George's shoulder is ready to go, woo! I'm telling you, Clippers are still very much in this conversation. If the NBA does have the conversation in the bubble, I know they're planning on it. We wish everybody luck. We're going to wish college football good luck eventually, even knowing that college kids might not be, you know, are we going to mess with college kids too? Pros? I guess they take a deal. What about college kids? When it comes to covering college, our next guest is one of the best at it. That's why ESPN hired him to be part of the SEC network. And welcome one and all to our 4 o'clock hour.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of 4 amazing new iPhone 15s. And each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get 4 iPhone 15s on us and 4 lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.